Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, it's Healthy Gut Girl. This is stuff your doctor should know, coming to you live from deep inside your large intestine. And guess what? The stuff your doctor should know today has to do with the full moon. So when I started this podcast, and I mentioned this in the episode today, I said to my friend Mark, if those of you who remember Mark, who we're still really good friends, and we might even start another show together at some point. When we started the show, I made a list of topics that I wanted to discuss on the show right away. And one of them was moon cycles, not just moon cycles and how they affect our, you know, females' moon cycles and the cycle of the actual moon, how they affect your period and your menses and all of that, but how it affects men as well, and how it affects women who aren't having cycles. You know, like, there is a cycle to the moon, and we as human beings are affected by it. And there are a lot of things that interfere with that cyclical pattern. You know, same thing with our circadian rhythms. There are things in the world now, so much artificial light and electromagnetic frequency, all so much interruption that interferes with our natural cycles that we would normally be quite connected with if we, you know, didn't have artificial light. And so I really wanted to find, you know, I know a little bit about it, but I don't know that much. And in this episode, I talk about The Red Tent, and which is a book that talks about how women used to cycle with the moon together. And it's super fascinating. And so many naysayers out there, you know, I post this a lot in the Estrogen Dominance Support Group on Facebook, where I will bring up, hey guys, we have a full moon on the horizon. And people don't, most people get it. They'll say, oh yeah, I can feel it. I can, you know, physically feel it coming. It worsens some women's cycles and, you know, makes other people moody or nervous or high energy. And there's always a handful of naysayers who are like, okay guys, you know, there's no science behind this. And you know, there actually is science behind it. And I've been wanting to find a guest who could walk us through not just a little bit of the science, but just talk about the behind what happens to women according to the moon. If that's probably the best way I can explain it. So finally, after over seven years of having this episode or this podcast, I meet this woman in my group, and her name is Sabrina Orania. I hope I said that right, Orania. She's a beautiful, lovely woman who I reached out to because she had been making some comments about the moon. And I thought, hey, I wonder if she knows all about this. Turns out, boy, does she ever. She has incredible knowledge about the cycles, but also just about fertility and the female body and just the essence of the female. And it's such a cool episode, really beautiful. She's very well spoken. I'm super excited to have her back because we are going to talk about more stuff that she is pretty savvy in these areas. She also teaches some courses. She has mentorships and courses that she teaches. She's a hormone expert. She does this womb guide. Her Instagram is womb_alchemist. Reclaim your body, emotions, and feminine radiance via science and the sacred arts. I love that. So check her out and listen up. You're going to love her. When my husband and I worked at this center for a while, there was this midwife that used to work with a lot of the pregnant mamas there. And she would say, you know, the number one thing she recommended, besides the diet that she had for women, was walking. She would say at least 3 to 4 miles a day when you're pregnant from the start, hopefully before you even get pregnant, you're doing that kind of activity already. And she said, every time it never fails, these women who do all this walking, they just pop those babies right out.
That's what I'm hoping for. That's good. Thank you. That's encouraging. Because as we get closer, I'm like, I would like a really not crazy fast, but in fast enough that I can integrate it. Kind of labor for sure.
Is this your first baby?
Second baby. Okay. I have a 1.5-year-old and my last labor was, we did a home birth and it was 10 hours. And I feel, I mean, you're in that space and you don't even know about time or anything, but I'm like, that was good timing. So, hey, if we could do like a little shorter than that, we're golden. I mean,
10 hours. So that's 10 hours. Are you saying like 10 hours from the time you went into labor or 10 hours of hard labor or?
I base it on pain. It was like 10 hours of when it was really hurting me.
Okay.
So yeah, it was definitely during, you know, kind of the intensity of dilation, like leading up. I mean, once we got to the pushing stage, I think I only pushed for like 30 to 45 minutes. Cause when we were there, I was like, that's when I finally felt like I could do something about it, you know? So I was like actively involved the rest of the time. I'm just trying to ride the waves and I'm like, how long have we been in this space?
Right. Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's great though. That's really, I mean, I've heard so many different stories and I love that one. I'm so curious. Like, I just want to be at everybody's birth. I just want to be like a fly on the wall, checking it all out.
It's an amazing space, amazing space to be in. And down here, so in San Miguel de Allende has the largest midwifery school in all of Mexico. So there's a lot of wonderful midwives and many of them also separate from like learning midwifery in school also have like kind of the traditional Mexican curandera sort of, you know, approach to birthing as well, which, I've been really blessed to connect with some amazing women and healers down here that have been a part of this journey for me of pregnancy and kind of preparing me for birth, but that will be present here at the birth at home. And so I'm really excited about that also.
Now, I know when you stood up and showed me your belly, it was right up front and center, but you did look really like very, very round and ready, but you're 7 months, right? And it's one baby?
Yeah, it's just one baby. I'm 5'1" and I have a pretty narrow torso. So I had this happen with my last pregnancy. Everyone's like, you're huge. You're sure not having twins? Which I guess is a common thing people get, but it's like, hey, if you're a small person, there's nowhere to go but out, really. So.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's a good thing. That's all good. Big babies are good.
Yeah.
So, I have to tell you that, when I started my podcast 7 years ago, probably a little longer now, my friend and I, who started the podcast, he and I sat down and made a list of things I wanted to talk about, topics that I wanted to broach and, you know, things that I could talk about on my own, but also guests, potential guests. And this was one of the top of the list, which was not just talking about fertility and pregnancy, but talking about the moon phases, cycles, and how they correlate to female cycles, to women's cycles. And I've never, you know, I read the book, The Red Tent, and a lot of us have. Sure. And then also there's a lot of bits and pieces in every kind of book written by women, like I think it was Sex, Lies, and Menopause. I forget who that, it was Wiley, the woman who did the Wiley Protocol. And she mentions something that I was trying to find online and trying to get other people to like pitch in and send me to somebody. So finally, this is like almost 7 years later that I come across you, which is awesome. But the statement she made was, if it wasn't for artificial light, all women would cycle on, they would begin their cycle on or around the new moon. And so that means bleeding either right before the new moon, on the new moon, or shortly after the new moon. And so just let's start there and tell me, I want to know everything. First, I want to know what brought you to this world. And then let's go down that other road.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. And I'm so excited to have this conversation also, because this is something, actually, to be perfectly honest, I think in my work, I sort of take for granted because we talk about it so much, but I realize that it's also not a topic that most people outside of this realm are necessarily that familiar with. So I actually, if you want to know the real story, if I go back far enough, I was initiated into what was called a new moon hoop, like a red tent circle, but it was a new moon based indigenous women's circle when I was 13 years old. Wow. I was invited by my best friend's mother. And it was a group of women, mostly mothers and elders, who had been meeting at this point for maybe about 13 years. And we were invited in, my best friend and I, because we had just begun our moon time, which is what they called our menstruation. And, you know, I was like in middle school. So this was powerful for me. I grew up in Northern Virginia, DC metropolitan area. These kinds of topics and this sort of secret gathering of women was very like hush hush. We weren't talking about it, you know, much. But I also was, you know, a teenage girl dealing with boys and acne and, you know, jealousy with other girls and just all of this sort of stuff. And so to be welcomed into a space of women that was like honoring and loving and connected, and it was about honoring the feminine and womanhood in a space where that really didn't exist in my world at all, was life-changing for me, actually. And so that group, you know, I ended up continuing to be a part of that from that point till I was around 30 years old, which is when I ultimately moved from that area. But I've since kind of initiated other circles and been a part of this. So the rhythm of gathering at the new moon with women has been, I call it like church for me, because it really has been like the stable spiritual practice that I've had through the majority of my teenage and adult life. And so that's what I mean about it being something that's like, has come so, it's just at this point, it's like second nature to me. It comes fairly naturally. But I spend a lot of time in my coaching work getting women to pay attention to their cycles and how their cycles do relate to the moon, but also how it's broken down in these phases that we talk about, right? The follicular phase, ovulation, the luteal phase, and menstruation, but how those, whether they're actually synchronistically lining up, like at the same time as these other things happening or not, you can still view the different parts of the cycle as having kind of particular energies to them. So there's the biological processes that are happening each of those times. And then at the same time, there's like this archetypal dynamic that's going on, you know, and we mirror that in what's going on with the mood phases. And so I see it as being both grounded in our biology and at the same time, kind of this fractalized nature of cyclical patterns that we are part of in the world, right? As women, So we deal with the four seasons, and within that, you know, we have all of these moon phases that are, they're broken into the four as well. We also have the kind of phases of a woman's life, right? Her maidenhood phase, her mothering years, whether or not she chooses to actually become a mother in this lifetime or not, the, what we often call kind of in this realm, like the sorceress or enchantress or the wild woman years that happen really during the menopausal period, and then our crone and our elder, you know, wisdom years. And so that same kind of pattern of four you see in the months, in, you know, in the seasons, in the moon cycle, in a woman's life. And it's just kind of aligning ourselves with that basic rhythm, I think has been a way to reclaim and fully connect to our feminine nature in a world that doesn't really honor that and is very focused on linear growth and circadian masculine solar rhythms, and which have a place, absolutely, but they've just been very kind of like elevated over the cyclical lunar rhythms.
I mean, I feel like this is something that always comes up for me, and I feel a little starved from, is wanting more of that all my life and wanting to understand. You know, I was brought up in a family that was Catholic. And then my mom was raised Catholic, but also they were quite poor. And so the combination of that and, you know, being Hispanic, and there's all these elements that lend themselves to being very embarrassed and shy, and, you know, anything having to do with, and I'm not even just talking about sex. I'm talking about, you know, being pregnant and
breastfeeding.
Breastfeeding and talking about cramps or bleeding. Like, these things were so taboo that you just don't talk about them.
And I'm living in Mexico right now, and I'm still breastfeeding my daughter, and I'm very pregnant. And I will tell you, you know, I think a part of it is in my nature and my personality, but I wear my belly out very publicly, you know, when I'm out and about in the streets. And I also breastfeed my daughter all the time everywhere. And I see culturally here, you know, it's more common to be bottle feeding babies. I mean, there's babies everywhere. There's definitely a culture of celebration of children and of babies here. That's absolutely a thing. And just the honoring of family. And that's something I really love about Mexico, but I see exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And I think I've been kind of just in living here, pushing the boundaries a little bit about that, you know, and for some people it makes them uncomfortable, but I see other people see a glimmer of something in that. You know, I watch people's responses to me in being that way, you know, and yeah. I think it is something that many women, like you're saying, have a yearning to reclaim.
Yes. That's a good word. I think yearning is such a good word because I certainly felt that growing up and, you know, didn't want to be, I mean, you know, like talking with my girlfriends about tampons was like, I was so excited to talk about it, you know, and that, even though that's a good thing, I just feel like I shouldn't have to just like be in the back rooms with my girlfriend talking about it. And I think it's done a real disservice. And I mean, we can really take this conversation, you know, historically back to what's been done to women in that way. But, you know, we don't have to get like too down and dirty here, but it's done a disservice to not just to women, but to humanity. Like it's just done a disservice to human beings, to children, because, you know, that fear and that shame of our own bodies is a terrible thing because look, like this, that's what you got at the end of the day is just your body. And so, you know, it's no shocker that I went into this field of work because I'm just like really digging at everything, not just in terms of being a woman, but why do I feel the way I feel? Why am I sick? Why am I sick all the time? All these things. So let's go back on the tracks here with the moon and the cycles. When I was really, really young, I was born very early and I was quite sick all the time, but I would get these fevers. And when I had these fevers, I would have these supernatural experiences. And my mom would say, you know, cause she comes from that curandera sort of background as well. And we're also Native Americans. So there's all this stuff, all this culturally rich stuff having to do with healing and spirituality connected. And she would say, you know, this is special. Like this is something that it's a gift and we have to look at it like that. And it's scary, but we have to like surrender to it when it happens. I doubt she used those words, but, and they were like out of body experiences.
Yeah.
And then as I got older, I started to realize that they would happen with the moon cycle. And I mean, they were crazy. I would leave the house. I would be flying up near the moon. It was crazy stuff and such lucid dreams.
Yeah.
So can you speak on like what's going on with the female and males? Because males have cycles too, right? Yes. Just dig in there.
Sure. Well, you know, there is this field of biology called chronobiology, right? Where we study how different kind of certain rhythms in nature affect human and other biology. And when we talk about it with other animals, there seems to not be such a weird feeling about it like we get with humans, you know, like we recognize certain insects have mating patterns that are associated with the moon or, you know, even plants need a certain amount of exposure to moonlight for part of their health and their growth. That's definitely not my wheelhouse, but I'm aware of that fact, you know? So it's like, why would that not also apply to humans? That doesn't really make any sense to me whatsoever. So there's a lot of different parts of this. One of the things you were saying about how that stigma has done a disservice, it's done a disservice, especially in the sense that there's not been enough research done about this really. And you know, just like I know that very little research has been done on women anyway, you know, scientifically, you know, and in the medical fields, and mostly because of this, because they're like, well, you're so variable, right? Like if we're testing you on your follicular phase versus luteal, like things are different and we want more of a constant. So we're just going to test on men. And that's kind of how it's been, you know? But I think it is this way that we are so deeply aligned to that cyclical rhythm. So, you know, I think that you can both look at it from a very scientific perspective, which I think is helpful. And I think it does bring a lot more people on board. And at the same time, I like to think of it as archetypal and energetic as well. And I don't think that it requires a scientific explanation necessarily to know the connection, the truth of this. Like if you speak to young girls about, for instance, their cycles linking up when living together, or having their, like this was a great example in my life is after I had my first daughter, my first bleed, my first cycle postpartum came at about 4 or 5 months, but it was my first night of camping and it happened to be a full moon. And I was camping in Kauai and I woke up in the morning with my blood after, you know, a year and a half of not menstruating. And it was like, oh, no surprise. Of course it's going to show up now, you know, because here I am like really connecting myself to the rhythms of the earth. I'm actually sleeping on the ground. I've exposed myself to full moonlight all night. We've been on the beach. There hasn't been any other kind of artificial light around. So there hasn't been these other kind of variables that we see. Mm-hmm. One reason why I think it's hard to see this connection in the modern world is because, one, like you were saying, the prevalence of artificial light, particularly blue light, which has an effect on our pineal gland and our melatonin production, all of which affect our sex hormones. Mm. But also, billions of women worldwide are on hormonal contraceptives, whether they're using an IUD or they're taking the pill or implant or whatever. And so that creates a synthetic cycle that isn't an actual period that won't necessarily link up or align to anything. And so because of the prevalence of that and how common that is in mainstream, I think we're having less and less women who are connected enough to the lunar rhythms and don't have these other kind of extraneous factors that are affecting it to be able to even see this pattern show up so clearly. Sure. Which is why they often say, like, oh yeah, you know, back in the day, like what you were saying initially, that, you know, all women would have been ovulating at the same time. I mean, most indigenous cultures do have this very clear understanding that the menstrual cycle is connected to the lunar rhythm. And whether that is the what's known as the synodic cycle, which is the cycle of the moon from new moon to the next new moon, so going through its phases, which is about 29 and a half days, or we're talking about more of the like gravitational cycle of the moon, which is known as the tropical. That's basically like when the moon returns to its same location in the sky. And those two things don't happen at exactly the same time every month, but that's about 27 point something days. And women are actually, our menstrual cycles are, and they've shown these in more recent studies, affected by both of those. But the one related to the light exposure, which has to do with the synodic cycle, the phases of the moon and how much light we're actually getting from the night sky, is more predominantly effective of women's menstrual cycles and why we link up to that. And the gravitational pull has more of a secondary effect on women.
Okay.
But if we were living, for instance, in a tribal society where we're all living in community, as in very closely, right? Like you're in a tent next to my tent, or we're sleeping in a, you know, a cabin together that's like, you know, a bunch of women all in one space together, you know, we both have the pheromone excretion that would support us being on similar cycles, but we're also engaged with the world in a much more direct way where we don't have other lights other than firelight, you know, that we'd be using throughout the evening. So we would be very affected in our pineal gland and our pituitary gland, both of which are affected by light and darkness, would be affected by how much exposure to full moon versus also how much exposure to darkness during the time. You know, you know the difference between camping on a full moon versus camping on a new moon. One, you're going to see the stars, but it's going to be pretty dark and you hopefully got flashlights. If you're camping on a full moon, sometimes people do without, you know, unless they're cold, fire, because you have that extra light. That light has such a direct effect on us, you know, in terms of our hormone production. They've even shown that, you know, with the exposure, particularly in the follicular phase to full moon light without a lot of interference from artificial light, that it supports promoting ovulation in women. It supports egg follicle development, you know, so that makes sense that we would be doing that. Also, you know, archetypally speaking, the full moon's been more associated with motherhood and fertility. And, you know, if you've ever kind of experienced that energy of like being out at a party or a full moon night when it's like out on the streets of the city, they can tend to be a little rowdier and crazier. And I think I'm not as familiar, but I do believe men have kind of this activated surge of testosterone around the full moon time too. So there is this energy that kind of like supports mating, for lack of a better word, with humans.
Yeah.
Fertility at that time. And it has also been shown that women who are ovulating with the full moon have greater likelihood or chances of success with pregnancy than the other way around.
Oh, wow.
I don't think that one's better than the other, though. I do think that the majority of women would be ovulating with the full moon and bleeding at the new moon if we were, like I said, living in this kind of communal, you know, society without artificial light. But I do think that there is a rationale, a biological rationale and imperative to being on the opposite cycle of that. Mm-hmm. And I've seen that a lot with my own clients when we're in the process of both doing healing work around, you know, bringing more regularity to their menstrual cycles, balancing their hormones, and also in the postpartum period. Because although some women's cycles bounce right back and then go right back to being regular to support another child right away, ideally there's like this optimal time to sort of replenish the body between children, so to speak. And so I found a lot of women will often line up with the, what they call the red moon cycle, as in bleeding during the full moon and ovulating during the new moon, for those first few cycles, or maybe even more once they regain their menstrual cycle postpartum, and then eventually noticing that it begins to shift. I see that as a sign that the body is opening itself back up to the possibility of fertility again, when it was coming from a period of time where it was much more needing nourishment and rebuilding and remineralization and all those kind of critical things that are necessary postpartum.
Interesting. Gosh, that was really good. And that book that talked about, that I mentioned earlier, it talks about that same concept, which is like when there's a lot more light, it just stands to reason, right? That if there's a lot more light outside, animals, humans, everyone is going to be more apt to want to be outside. And, you know, the later, also when it's later, longer in the day. And then, so, and then in the, I think it was the red tent, it mentions, you know, when the new moon comes, how it's, it lends itself to being, you know, bundled up and quiet and silent and maybe even in pain.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, and then doing that together, like bleeding together, sitting on a haystack with your, you know, your knickers up and whatever, and just like having that. And I just thought that's just so cool, you know? And then like when the moon is full, you know, the men want to go out and they just want to get rowdy. And whenever I post something in regards to the moon, in the group, it's always the same percentage of people. There's always like all these, like I'll say something like, hey, how's that moon treating everybody or something? And it's going to be, you know, a super moon or whatever. And they'll be like, you know, 85% of the comments will be like, yes. Oh, thanks for reminding me. No wonder I'm this issue, that actually. And then there'll be this percentage of people that are like, okay. Sometimes they're like, all right, I've had enough. Bye, group. but other ones are just like, what does that mean? Like, it's not very science-based at all. Like, how could this even matter? And I always reference and go back to my father, who was a deputy sheriff in Santa Fe, New Mexico, when I was a kid. And all he was always in the law enforcement field. And he hated full moons. He said, because there was always a surge in violence, always. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of times domestic violence more so than anything. And he said, that's just the way it would go, you know?
So I think if you ask people who are in fields like that, like, I know that that's the same is true. Oftentimes, you know, nurses or hospital workers will see things like that. Mm-hmm. I was a bartender for years when I was younger, and definitely working in the bar world, you're just more likely to get, you know, I mean, even the word lunacy, right? Like it's very much built into our language that we recognize that people have, that the moon affects people's moods. And if there is some type of instability, that's generally, you know, it's like, if you're in a place where you're unstable for some reason or another, you're maybe more vulnerable to mm-hmm. be affected by that. You know, I'm definitely like on the fringe in the sense that astrology has been a big passion of mine throughout my life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as much as I have this like academic history, I don't feel the need to explain everything scientifically. I like having some science to lie on. It also, you know, it also helps me feel like I can converse with people who live maybe in a paradigm where if it isn't proven by science, it doesn't have any value or doesn't mean anything, but that's not necessary for me. And I think that that's kind of also an expression of the feminine, is that there's this also this mystery and this space of just the unknown and the trusting, you know, and being willing to kind of work with and surrender with that without needing to intellectualize or, you know, reason it away in some way or another. So it doesn't surprise me that you would make a post like that. And so many women would say that because, you know, what it helps to pay attention to it. I think for me, I started at maybe I was 17 or 18. I was recommended to start a journal that included the phase of the moon, the sign that the moon was in, and then kind of list how I was feeling physically, emotionally, mentally. And after about 3 months of doing that, I began to see some very clear patterns in my health, in how I interacted with my relationships and things like that. And so, you know, I think if anybody really, if any woman really takes the time to observe that, they won't be surprised at all that there is.
Yeah. It's you can't miss it.
Hey everyone, I wanted to introduce Ona's new ultra-concentrated CBD progesterone cream. It's 5% CBD and 3% progesterone for relief of stress, anxiety, minor aches and pains in your muscles and joints. It is U.S. sourced, produced, and naturally derived. It's organically grown. And right now, we are doing a special because this particular strength of CBD on the market, which is THC-free, normally goes for about $120 for 2 ounces. So we are doing $60 as an introductory offer. And the reason I developed it was because this particular combination with the CBD helps to downregulate cortisol while it helps you to take advantage of the progesterone benefits. The link is in the show notes, or you can go to us.onasnatural.com.
I'm going to say this anyway, because even though you're like, we just sometimes have to trust. I did start to make a list of questions for you. And I was like, you know what? It's not going to go down like that. I just had a feeling. But one of the questions is, do you know? So we already mentioned light. So there's a clear function of how light affects us. Blue light, red light, all the different spectrums of light and moonlight. So what is, you hear this all the time. What is it about the water content of our bodies and the tide? People will say, look, if the moon can affect the tides, why can't it affect us? We're like 90-some% water. So what is, do you have something to say about that?
Yeah. Remember how I was saying that there's these different cycles of the moon. The synodic one is the light cycle. And then the tropical one is more about the positioning of the moon from one point in the sky to when it returns to that same point. And because its orbit is slightly elliptical, that's what leads to the differences in the pull of the tides, or one reason, right? When it's closer to the earth versus when it gets kind of more in the further part of the ellipses and is a little bit further away. And yeah, we're 80% water, you know, so it's not surprising that it would also have a pull on us in some way. I don't know that anybody's, I haven't found anybody do any serious research aside from some of these studies that I kind of mentioned before, where they found that there was a secondary effect, you know, because that's that 27-day cycle or whatever, that it does have an effect on women's menstrual cycles, specifically the gravitational relationship between the moon and the earth. Okay. But in terms of why, you know what I mean?
I mean, I've had some theories of my own that I liked, because, you know, it obviously, you know, it has, it also has an effect on, you know, parasites and in animals and, you know, the hatching cycles of different amoeba and things like that. And so, you know, if we have water in our tissues and we have water in our guts and water everywhere, and then, you know, this pulling sensation is happening, that stands to reason too. Like it would, it would kind of facilitate or egg on some kind of movement and activity, almost relying on that. Like you would think biochemically, these bugs could rely on that. So the more inflammatory, more inflamed you might be, maybe the moon even has more of an effect. Like we think about people in the insane asylums and people in mental hospitals really losing it during the full moon. It's like that could be because the amount of inflammation and water on the brain and things like this.
Or parasitic activity, like you're
all
saying.
All of that.
Yeah. Because I mean, I deeply believe parasites have an effect on our mental state and well-being as well, just from my own personal experience and what I've seen. The other thing I was thinking, and you were saying that, is that there are an uptick in births during full moons as
Really?
Yeah. I don't know what the percentage is, but I mean, having talked to many midwives, like very often, you know, if you're in that window where you're close to giving, you know, being ready, that could be a time where, for instance, you know, three mothers might all go into labor pretty closely aligned with the full moon. Well, you know, if it was just a little bit before, a little after their, you know, quote unquote due date.
Yeah. Interesting. You know, it just, it's funny because if you think about like, if we didn't have all these distractions that we have and, you know, it's so fascinating. It's always been fascinating to me to think of the historical, like cultures, different cultures in the world who, you know, mapped the skies and who everything was reliant upon, you know, cyclical changes in celestial changes and things. And that wasn't just because they didn't have TV. It, well, that certainly played a role into not being distracted, but they became reliant on it because it like became part of their survival. It was their science, right?
So they, yeah, and calendar and all of it. Yeah.
So they knew, it's like the almanacs, right? It's like they know that this every few years or every decade or every whatever comes this particular drought. And we're going to know how bad that drought is because our great grandfathers have marked this down. And if we see this particular star in the sky and the moon is this color,
sure,
we're going to call that a wolf moon because there's wolves running around during that time. And it's so beautiful. It's so poetic and really scientific, if you think, because they keep doing it over and repeating this, knowing that these tides and these cyclical changes are going to happen. And it's funny that we just don't do that now. I almost feel a little ignorant because of it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I truly think of astrology as both a science and an art. We often think about it depending on who you're asking, some people think it's total quackery, but oftentimes it's seen as like a divinatory art, but it requires a lot of math and science, right?
Right.
Like, to even get to the point where you're going to interpret something like, oh, this means this for you, or this means this for this season, or this means this for whatever, you know, that whole part comes after, like, literally being able to chart where everything is in the sky at any given piece of time, whether it's in the future or the past. You have to account for longitude and latitude. You have to account, you know, there's all of these things. So the people who were doing this work throughout history were very intelligent people. And actually many of them are people that we do, you know, honor in history, but mostly for other scientific discoveries. But many of these people, you know, Kepler, Copernicus, all these people were also knowledgeable and practicing astrology. And actually in many ways, that was what was financially supporting them because, you know, they didn't necessarily have, they weren't being funded by a university to get a grant to do research. You know what I mean? That was like their passion. And then their discoveries end up being what they kind of get known for in their legacy. But they were probably being paid by wealthy patrons and kings and stuff to look at their astrology. And that was ultimately what was like funding their reality, you know, and this has been very separated in our modern worldview. But to me, I find it very scientific. And I think, you know, it deserves another look. And I think women's bodies is kind of the focal point of where that really comes alive. And we still see it day to day, whether or not we can explain it.
Yeah. Yeah. That was so good. That was so well said. It's just like baffling to me that got turned into witchcraft.
The starting point is really what our topic is today, which is that, you know, as a woman, you know, whether you're in your menstruating years or not, okay, you know, you're still connected to these particular rhythms and these phases, you know, whether you have a womb or you don't anymore, like a physical womb. So, you know, I think having women begin to take note of and pay attention to, you know, how they're feeling at different phases of the month, and relating that to the moon, to just observing it. No need to even make any kind of determination about it at all. I just think for each woman to have that opportunity to acknowledge, you know, that, because I genuinely think that we're not the same every day of the month. And we know that biologically, you know, biochemistry, that we're not, because we have a lot of different hormonal processes going on. And we're either at a phase of our cycle where estrogen's running the show, or we're in the phase of our cycle where progesterone's, and that they affect us differently. They affect our moods dramatically differently, you know? And, you know, whether it's because we're supporting and supplementing or just naturally, that's what's happening to us, you know? So I think honoring that we are different women at different times of the month, the lunar month, and, you know, just acknowledging that and taking a look at the moon, going outside, spending more time connected to that. You know, one thing that I have recommended to a lot of my clients when they're dealing with maybe with like irregularities in their cycle, obviously this isn't a standalone, because I do genuinely believe that diet and, you know, using nutraceuticals and lifestyle plays such a big part of all of this, but is moon bathing, you know, it's something that's been really promoted in like Ayurvedic traditions, but essentially it's light therapy with the moon. The same way we say, you know, it's ideal for your cortisol, you know, cycles to get out in the sun first thing in the morning, you know, and get some of that morning sunlight on you. Same is true in the evening, right? We don't want to be filling the house with a ton of light at night. We don't want to be staring at a screen right before bed, you know, but it could be taken to an even further level where ideally, you know, you keep things extra dark during the time of the month that's the new moon to kind of mimic or replicate what sleeping outside during that time period would be if it's not as realistic for you to go camping all the time or whatever, actually be sleeping outside, you know, depending on where you live. But, you know, maybe you keep it very extra dim in the evenings during that time of the month, or you're just using some candlelight or something before bed. And then during the time of the full moon, sleep in a such a way where you have the window, curtains open, and you actually have the ability for the full moon to be on you at night, or go outside and spend a little time under the full moon light for a little while. Because I genuinely believe that as we separate from a lot of these artificial lights and we reacclimate ourselves to that lunar light cycle, the synodic cycle of the moon, that can support us in coming back into balance with our cycles as well.
And do you think just the light itself, or you think something happens in our subconscious or in our bodies where just looking at the phase of the moon is information, right? Like, okay, it's a new moon and it's totally dark and I see that, and it like registers in my body in a certain way.
Both and. I think it brings about a feeling for sure. I think it's like, it's part of sort of rewilding us to the both sacred and, just like the natural information that we get from interacting more with the more than human and kind of wild natural world that I think is deeply, deeply lacking in our, in our society and our culture. And I think it's so incredibly healing. I mean, we know that you could just go camping for 2 days because it can entirely reset your cortisol, right? I mean, there's just things like that where, you know, being in that space can make such a big difference to what's going on hormonally and biologically for us. But I also think being in awareness, like you're saying, and paying attention to it, it's reminding us of how deeply interconnected we are to all of these rhythms of nature, and a knowing that, you know, people feel very lost these days. There's a disconnect and a sense of meaninglessness and loss of purpose. And I think that the more we're connecting to the natural world, the more we witness that around us, that there is meaning, that there is connection between things that is visible that maybe we don't see if we're just watching the news, you know, because things can feel like, I know for me during the beginning of the COVID pandemic, I was living in Humboldt County, California, in a very kind of wild, rugged, natural place by the sea and in the redwoods. And, you know, if I was watching the news, I was in a state of like fear and anxiety because the world looked like a really terrifying place. But if I just went outside and sat in the woods, plants and the animals are acting like everything's fine. You know what I mean? And so it's like, it's just this remembering that like, there is more going on, and this ability for life to continue and to regenerate itself and heal, and that's going on all the time. But we have to be willing to tap into that information and kind of serve it around us.
Did you make that word up, rewilding?
No. Oh no, yeah. Definitely not. I have no idea who used that term, but I use it a lot. I mean, I've you know, there's been a movement. I don't know if maybe how long it's been going on, maybe the last 10 or 15 years of rewilding, which I think for people can mean a variety of different things. So whether that's living closer to nature, you know, eating animals nose to tail, you know, for me as a woman doing this type of work, I think it's about connecting, like I said, to the moon, but also connecting to the sacredness of our menstrual cycle, you know, giving our blood back to the earth, you know, so that's all like different ways that can express itself. But yeah, I'm definitely a proponent of rewilding ourselves, because I think, we've denigrated our animal nature, you know, as something bad, like we were talking about before, you know, like it's, you know, just carnal and it's dirty. And there's obviously the whole sexual aspect or whatever. But I think the fact that we are also animals and we have the ability to have instinct and intuition that's similar to animals, that's like inherent in us. I mean, as a woman, and I don't know, I think this is true for a lot of women, you know, they feel that maybe most strongly in transitions like pregnancy, right? Like going from maiden to mother and that experience of being pregnant, like, you know, we talk about the nesting urge. We talk about these, like, and these are instinctual urges, the urge of actually pushing, you know, when your body starts to tell you to do all these things. Like, nobody needs to be taught how to do these things. You know, it is just built into our DNA how to do these things. And I think that there's much more information available to us than just that. But I think those are the times where it kind of becomes hard to ignore in the life of a woman, you know. And so the more we can do to get out of our heads and get into our bodies and listen to the wisdom of the body, the more I deeply think we can be guided through moving through, you know, more challenging phases and difficult things in life.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I feel so inspired. So there is no right or wrong with cycles, with the time of the moon. You know, women, do you feel like you were saying, you know, yeah, go outside and moon bathe, moon gaze. But do you feel like if a woman is on a cycle, like a red moon cycle, do you think that there is any reason for her to try to change that? Say she's really regular and everything.
No, I actually, it might have been in your group that I saw someone post on that. I remember seeing something online where they were like, you know, this might sound kind of woo-woo, but bear with me for a minute. I feel like my cycle is less bad, or like I have less symptoms when I am aligned with the new moon, with the white moon cycle, right? Where so you're ovulating with the full moon and you're bleeding during the new moon. You know, and so she was asking, like, how do I get there? You know?
Yeah.
And I think it's actually an inverse relationship where it's like, actually, I think that if you're in a state of your body being open and ready for fertility, or like optimal fertility, then your body will naturally line up more likely. Not that you couldn't get pregnant the other way. And I don't want to say that at all, because I do teach women fertility awareness method. I think it's important to be aware of when you're ovulating and not just rely on the moon as an indicator of that, you know, solely, but that you are kind of primed more for an outward and external giving out of energy. Whereas when you're on the red moon cycle, I have seen it with my clients, and I kind of feel this way intuitively, that it is a time where that energy is kind of directed more inward, because when everyone else is having that external focus, your focus is inward. And when everyone else is, quote unquote, everyone else, but inward during the new moon, there is more creative energy there. And it isn't necessarily being geared toward procreation or fertility, but it can be used for renewal and replenishment and healing. Mm-hmm. You know, like I was saying before, you know, how I see that a lot with women postpartum, because it's like, you need this time to heal and rest. And we don't want you to, the intelligence of the body saying something like, we don't want you to be in a state where you might potentially have a greater chance of getting pregnant, because you're ovulating with that high energy and that sexual energy of the full moon, because your body's not quite ready yet. And we want to have a little bit more time and a little bit more space. So I don't think one's better than the other at all. I just think they're serving different purposes. And I think that rather than trying to change when you are in the cycle, using where you are in the cycle as information about what your body is doing, like, and what it's trying to tell you, and then working with that. Okay, so my body's in a state right now where it's trying to replenish and heal, or it's trying to create something, you know, like, in inner growth, inner development, right? Like, so I'm going to do that, because that's what's going on right now, you know? Or if you're like, I've been trying to get pregnant and my cycle hasn't been lining up with moon, but all of a sudden it did, I would take that as like a green light. Like, oh, this is a good sign. Like, we should really try now. This is a good time, you know?
Yeah.
That whole idea of like, and this is why I think the power of the menstrual cycle and the moon were so much more implicit in the ancient world, is because if you imagine no artificial lights, no birth control, all of us living together, all of the women, for the most part, except ones that were on that other cycle, and they would have stood out, right? Like, the majority of women would have been bleeding at the same time, and then some other ones wouldn't. And it's kind of like you can get a better understanding of what we're all kind of culturally doing at that moment. For one, it would be a force of nature. Like, within the tribe, imagine all the women going through their premenstrual phase at the same time. You know what I mean? Like, the men can't be like, oh, she's just going to get her period. Like, it's like the half of the community is doing a thing right now. You know what I mean? It's like, and so it can't be invalidated, because it's just too potent, you know?
Wow.
So it actually can't be anything but honored, because it just is, right? And so it makes sense that women would start to gather around that time and separate from the men and want to be together and do their healing work. And there's so much lore around, you know, the bleeding, the time that women have is actually a time of not just like letting go and healing and replenishing for the body, but also that, like, what it is that we're letting go of in our cycles is actually part of the energetic collective space that we've been holding for the group, for the tribe, for everyone, you know, and making it this like prayer of like, hey, I'm all of the tough stuff that we've been living through in our household, in our tribe, in our community over the last month, like in me bleeding and releasing this back to the earth. I'm like clearing it out. I'm letting it go. I'm making space for new renewal, new possibilities, you know, new life to come forth, you know, and wow. That's, our bodies are like the process of which that's happening. And then thinking about the women that would have been on that opposing cycle, you know, in traditional lore, they were more seen as like priestesses or healers or shamans because they're holding the opposite polarity, you know? And like I said, they would have been more of the minority at any given time, but they would have stood out, you know? So, so it's not surprising that they'd maybe be seen like going through a process of maybe inner growth and development, or that they are able to, because they would be at their strongest, quote unquote, in terms of their energy through ovulation and their ability to be more relational during that time period because of the estrogen that's going on, everything, while all the other women would be going through their inner bleeding time and that more sensitive period that we have. So of course they'd be seen as healers because they're kind of able to hold the space for everyone else in that moment. Does that make sense?
Yeah. That was really beautiful, actually. And so now we're not really in tribal communities. And so, you know, you hang out with your girlfriends for the weekend and then everybody's cycle lines up. Take a stab at why that could potentially, why does that happen?
I mean, science wants to say it's pheromones. I think that's kind of the like leading explanation about what's going on with that. I mean, I think that I do think that it is kind of the most, and this is such a difficult word to use, but I do think it's the most natural way that we would all be doing this together. You know?
They would come on at the same time and then they would ovulate at the same time, giving, I'm going to that, like, you know, intellectualize it.
Sure.
But then they would come on at the same time, giving the males more options.
Sure.
Because all the women would be pregnant at the same time, giving them more options to get to procreate.
Right. There's like a evolutionary biological advantage to that for the continuation of our species. Absolutely.
Interesting.
Because a man could potentially, you know, fertilize many women at that particular given time or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
That's so fascinating. Okay. So I want to talk about, before we wrap up at all, I want to talk about the fertility awareness, because this is something that if I had more hours in the day, I would really try and just spread the word more. You know, you've seen it in the group, maybe oftentimes when we say, you know, gosh, try to avoid the pill if you can, try to avoid medicated birth control, if at all possible. And then always, and a lot of times it's women asking for their young daughters.
Yeah.
And then they always say, well, what do we do? You know, condoms are so unrealistic and la, la, la. Yeah. So, you know, I just think this part is missing also. We were all starved of this, and you were very lucky as a young woman to be able to be in groups of women learning, you know, what is going on? Why is this coming out of me? What is this cervical mucus? And why is it this color? Or why does it smell this way? Or all of these things, like, just were, I don't know, very few people have learned.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know what a luteal phase was until I couldn't get pregnant, until I was miscarrying. I didn't even know. I heard of
Isn't it just so heartbreaking though, that this is our home, our bodies.
That's
and
the word.
We know so very little about what's going on with them. And I think that that's a lot of just the work I do it's about inspiring women to want to know how sacred and amazing their bodies actually are. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like we've sort of been taught that as women, we have sort of defective bodies. I mean, because of the prevalence of things like hormonal imbalances, you know, it's almost like as a woman, your body is pretty much like primed to break down at some point, and we got to like figure something out, rather than seeing that there are, of course, ways to optimize our health, but just that there is so much wisdom in having a period and having a cycle when, you know, people have been taking drugs to suppress it or even not ovulate, not bleed at all, right? It's like, it's been more and more birth control options have made it so women don't even have to have a fake period or anything whatsoever. So there's no inconvenience whatsoever, you know? So it's also about like re-enchanting our bodies to this amazing power that they have that goes so far beyond just fertility. Mm. Fertility is an indicator of the health of what's going on with the body, but it isn't necessarily it's not everyone's end goal, and it doesn't need to be, but we should still do things to honor and support our fertility because it is part of our overall health, whether or not we're actually trying to get pregnant or not, you know? So I think this fear, women have been so disconnected from their own bodies, and it creates a lot of fear because we're always feeling like our bodies are going to betray us. I don't want to get pregnant, but my body wants to get pregnant. And so it's trying to do this thing, and I'm like at war with it somehow to keep it from doing that, you know? Mm-hmm. And then on the flip side, you know, so many women experiencing miscarriage, like you just shared, I've also had a miscarriage before, and then feeling betrayal on the other side. I wanted to have this baby and my body chose not to. There was a terrible travesty happened inside my womb that I had no control over, and it doesn't feel like a safe space, and I'm disconnecting from it, you know? Mm-hmm. So there's just so many things like that that we have to navigate as women. And so to me, fertility awareness is part of re-educating ourselves so that we can get to a place where we can be in partnership working with our bodies and being able to trust our bodies. And so much of it is just education. The more you know, the more you can work together with the body, the less you feel like you're at odds. And there's this kind of, you know, you're both have different goals in mind.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're, in what capacity do you work with anybody, any age, any woman?
Yeah. A lot of my early work was around polycystic ovarian syndrome, because that's what ultimately got me into this work, is that I was diagnosed with PCOS in my early to mid 20s. Mm-hmm. And I had already had all the trauma from birth control and how much that had affected me and everything. And so that was kind of my specialty, was helping women in that capacity or with irregular cycles. And then it ended up also being transitioning off birth control, because I realized that's something I just feel really, really passionately about, which I'm sure you hear coming through with a lot of the things that I'm saying about rewilding and connected to the earth. And I feel like that, aside from just the things we know that are high risk and long-term effects of synthetic hormones in that way, but also that I feel like it is yet another thing that is inhibiting us from fully trusting and connecting with our bodies, you know?
Yeah.
And then now I'm doing more work with helping women with preparing for conception and things like that, as I'm having my second child. And I've been kind of in this particular world for the last several years also. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to fertility awareness, I help women both utilizing it to avoid pregnancy. I just recently did a workshop that I also have available that you can get through my site called How Not to Get Pregnant the Embodied Way. And I do an overview of fertility awareness for contraception, that being the focus, because you can also use fertility awareness to support getting pregnant by knowing the best and the optimal times to actually try to conceive. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, also I think it's important to just utilize to understand what your hormones are doing, right? Like based on the quality of your cervical mucus, the different patterns that you're having, you can have a deeper understanding about what your hormones are actually up to. You know, mm-hmm. I think it's helpful to test, but you can get a lot of information by tracking your cycle, you know?
Yeah.
I also, in that workshop, talk about herbal plan B methods. And that's another thing that I'm very passionate about. I have a history in herbalism. And to me, women, this is what you're talking about, that like witch thing, you know, part of it was just, we worked with plants, you know what I mean? Like, just like traditionally men were the hunters, women were gathering the plants and the herbs. And so we learned a lot about what they do and how to use them. And, you know, a lot of it also comes from our long history of animal husbandry, because people who work close to the earth agriculturally in farming societies, they were aware of what types of plants they didn't want their livestock to eat because it could potentially interfere with their ability to procreate, right? It could sterilize them temporarily or long-term. And so that same knowledge could be applied to human women to avoid pregnancy. Mm. And I think it's, I think a lot of people have, one, I think that whole science has very much been demonized, like many of the things we're talking about, you know, but there are ways to utilize herbs safely and a long lineage and what I think is an ancestral legacy of ours as women to understand, you know, if you are trying to avoid pregnancy and you have a whoopsie, right? You recognize you're in your fertile window, and this is something that needs to be paired with fertility awareness to be used appropriately. Mm-hmm. If you are aware that you're in your fertile window and that you did have sex that may have resulted in conception, there is still a window of time between when the egg is fertilized and when it actually implants into the uterus. And that, you know, that's something I know you're aware of in terms of progesterone being a really critical component to mm-hmm. allow that to even happen. But if someone was trying to avoid pregnancy, there are a variety of different categories of herbs that could be supportive in that time, because actually it's like 1 in 5 times that an egg is fertilized, it doesn't necessarily ever turn into a real pregnancy because implantation doesn't happen. And we wouldn't even know because we would just have our next period.
Right.
For some reason or another, it didn't take, you know, whether that was the low progesterone, like so low that it didn't create a safe enough wall for it to implant in, mm-hmm. Or there was just something defective that the body didn't want to, you know, gamble on trying to grow into a being or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so that's another area that I teach women about as well, once they understand the basics of fertility awareness. So I do that. I do one-on-one coaching with women around that, where, you know, over the course of several months, we will work together to make sure that they understand how to apply this method to themselves, troubleshoot any issues about it, and also utilize it to, like I said, understand what's going on with their hormones, because mm-hmm. most women are dealing with cycle irregularities or challenges, you know? And so you don't have to have a perfect cycle to utilize fertility awareness method, but it does mean that you might have to do a little deeper digging, have to pay, you know, more careful attention, be aware of what's going on, to be able to use it for fertility or for contraceptive purposes.
It's, you know, it seems like a lot of times people are like, well, thank goodness we have birth control, because there would be so many, you know, unexpected and unwanted pregnancies. But I feel like education about this would actually do the opposite. Yeah. I think it would become more of an awareness where you would just, you know, once it's like, you know, when you're a kid and they give you a little, you know, ant farm to take home, or, you know, used to put the toothpicks in an avocado seed sure. and bring that home, and they give you something to care about, and you care about it. And then all of a sudden it's, you feel responsible for it.
Sure.
And now you're taking care of it. And that's just a function of people will be responsible if you give them the opportunity to be responsible.
Well, the funny thing about it is we've never not been 100% responsible for our own fertility. We've just been led to believe that it can be outsourced to a pharmaceutical, to a device, to a doctor, mm-hmm. when it's 100% been our both responsibility and amazing gift given to us by our creator, you know,
yeah.
that we carry with us. And so, yeah, I think that like you get to a place where you feel so much more empowered once you know this stuff. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and you're lying to yourself a little bit if you don't act like it is in your hands from the get-go.
Right. And that, I mean, that's great. Yeah, that was really profound, because that goes for everything and health-wise, right?
Sure,
everything.
It does.
Like you can't, you really are lying to yourself. If you don't think that our health is in your, you know, your own, the responsibility for your health is you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Amazing. So I'm super excited. I wasn't anticipating the whole fertility concept discussion. And I'm glad that came up, because I really feel like, you know, we should talk about this more in the group. And mm-hmm. I don't know how much time you have in that way, but I would love to have our resident expert to be able to just, you know, gain clients, to share info, to post facts about certain things. I would love to have you participate in that way if you have the time. I know
sure.
you've got your other baby on the way.
I know I do have my other baby on the way. So I don't know what I can guarantee in the immediate upcoming future, but I really appreciate that invitation to share more information there.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I learned so much from your group, and okay. I also feel like, you know, separate from learning a lot of information that's new that I want to take in to be able to utilize in my practice, but I also learned so much about, you know, what types of things women are dealing with and their perspectives on what's going on. And,
yeah.
you know, so it also really helps me understand, you know, my client base and just what's going on in the world of women. And so, yeah, I'm just so grateful for the group that you have and being able to be a part of it. And I'd love to be able to share
oh,
you know, more of my experience and my my teachings there. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. That group has done a lot of shocking things for me where I did not expect at all. It really helped me grow as a person in trying to put out fires and still be kind and still be gracious. And that has been probably the most shocking thing because
sure.
Just to maintain, my temper and then just learning all the different ways that, there is no one way to heal and not everything works for every one person
yeah.
and how variable things can be. So it's been great. Well, I'm so grateful to you for your time. This was perfection, exactly what I was hoping for and more.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful.
Oh, yay. I hope to have you back soon. Just so good. I love Moon Talk. I love motherhood talk and femininity talk. And she just embodies that. Sabrina is the essence of womanhood. That's what I think. She's wonderful. And I'm going to have her back for sure. I really enjoyed that. Anyway, I definitely think you should check her out. Again, you can find her on Instagram. And all of her information is in the show notes. Womb_alchemist is her Instagram name. And then she does have these courses. And if you go onto her Instagram, she also offers these free PMS supplements guide. She has all of these things for free, information that you can have, different talk about fertility awareness, how to not get pregnant the embodied way, just a lot of really excellent info. If you don't have Instagram, you can also go to Sabrina, OURANI.com. You're going to, that picture of her is so pretty. You're going to love it. And then go to Ona's, USONA's.natural.com. Did I say it again? I never say it right. I don't know why. It's us.onasnatural.com and use your coupon code, which is also in the show notes, and you can get 10% off your purchase for progesterone, estrogen, plant-based hormone support, testosterone booster, calm cream, which is CBD plus progesterone, which helps for anxiety attacks and insomnia and all sorts of goodness. There's even a heavy metal topical chelation cream on there that we have, and we have some other products in the works at the moment, so definitely go check that out. So the moon, what do you think? I think that people need to stop naysaying and start to moon gaze and start to appreciate that it really does have an impact on us for some reason. There are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophy. A little Shakespeare for you. All right, friends. Woo!